Welcome to the Spiel on Hamilton. After a long hiatus, I'm delighted to be back with a new season, beginning with today's episode, where I welcome a very special guest. Leslie Simpson was born and raised in Hamilton and is the founder of L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project. Leslie worked as staff reporter for Canadian daily newspapers for about 20 years before going back to school in 2013 to complete a PhD in Jewish studies. Her research explored Jewish ethical wills and other paradigms of Jewish memory. In October of 2024, she founded L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project, as a labor of love, calling it her little flashlight during a dark time. We've reached Leslie today in Toronto, where she now lives. Hi, Leslie, and welcome to the Spiel.
Hi, Wendy. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. So, Leslie, before we get into your very interesting project, tell us about your Hamilton connection.
Sure. I have deep roots in the Hammer. I went to Earl Kitchener and Ryerson and Westdale Secondary School. And I worked for about a decade at the Hamilton Spectator. And I designed some undergrad writing courses at McMaster for students in the Bachelor of Science program from 2005 to 2007, a really innovative corner of the world. And at different points in my life, I was a member of all three synagogues, Temple Enchi Sholem, Beth Jacob, and the Addis as part of my Jewish journey. And my parents still live in the house I grew up on Hess Street, and I return often.
Great. So let's dive right into this passion project that you have. What is a Jewish letter, a Jewish ethical will, and what makes it Jewish?
So I call them wisdom letters. I made up this term wisdom letters because when people hear Jewish ethical will, they assume that these letters are legal documents. They have no legal power at all. The power they have resides in the voice of the person who has written the letter. So what are these letters? A Jewish wisdom letter is a letter about how to create a life of purpose. It's often written from parents to kids. Sometimes grandparents will write to grandchildren. And people who have a public profile, like famous rabbis or philanthropists or politicians, sometimes write with a more public audience in mind. They're extraordinary letters. And I founded L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project, because I wanted to share the tradition with a larger audience.
And what got you interested in this topic?
So this sounds like super corny, and it's the truth. Many years ago, I read a book with a really long title. It was called So That Your Values Live On, Ethical Wills and How to Prepare Them. And this was a collection of letters, kind of chronologically organized. But I felt like Alice in Wonderland. I felt as if I had traveled through this portal when I read these letters. And when I was reading them, I imagined it was like being at a dinner party with people I would never meet, and certainly people I did not know, but they were all sharing what had mattered the most in their lives. It was extraordinary. Each voice was different, kind of like imagine a collection of snowflakes. There was a man named Eldad Pan who wrote about the need to create a life that was attached to something bigger than yourself. There was a woman named Devorah Weisman who wrote about she had come from Australia with her kids to Israel, and she wrote about the fragrance of a Jerusalem morning. And I was hooked, and I got curiouser and curiouser. So as you mentioned in your introduction, I did a PhD about these letters and paradigms of Jewish memory. And my dream one day, I'm still looking for more letters, if any of your listeners have any. My dream one day is to publish a collection of letters from Jews from around the world, not the rich and the famous, but just ordinary people doing this extraordinary thing.
And you've been on this journey of collecting letters for quite a while. You have a Substack which I have done a deep dive into, and you featured so many different types of letters. Can you give our listeners some example of the letters that you have featured on your Substack page?
Yeah, with pleasure, sure. So I've published now about almost 40 letters from around the Jewish world. To just give you a kind of sense of the historical frame, my earliest letter is from a 12th century doctor, book collector and translator, kind of one of the Renaissance men of his time, named Judah Ibn Tibbon. And I give him the unintentional humor award because his letter is a great example of what you don't want to do, Wendy. He has a total temper tantrum at his son. Now, why do I love that letter? I love it because it shows even in the 12th century, some parents were completely tearing their hair out at the antics of their kids. So that's my earliest one. And they move historically to the contemporary moment. These are letters originally written in Polish, Yiddish, French, Spanish, Hebrew. Some have been translated. And you might wonder, like, what makes them Jewish in the first place? So you may remember in the Torah, there are a lot of reminders for the Israelites to remember. They're supposed to remember Shabbat, and they're supposed to remember the covenant, and they're supposed to remember the Exodus from Egypt. There's a lot of reminders. So it suggests that, you know, it's really easy to forget, and it's harder to remember. Remembering takes some work. And there's a great book about Jewish memory that really influenced me called Zahor, History and Jewish Memory, by the historian Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi. And he talked about the fact that only in Israel, in other words, the people of Israel, and nowhere else, is the injunction to remember felt as a religious imperative to an entire people. And these letters really constitute a form of remembering. Like, look, Moses did not have a MacBook Air, right? He had the original tablet. But he was giving instructions to people about how to live. And if you look at his farewell speech, where he reviews history and Deuteronomy and teaches values before he dies, one of the things he says is choose life. So when I chose the word L'chaim, I'm really kind of channeling Moses there because these letters are all about life. So you asked, what have I featured? So one of my personal favorites is a letter from Shalom Aleichem, the great Yiddish writer, who asked to be remembered with laughter. And when he died in 1916, the New York Times published his entire letter in its entirety on a full page. And what did he write? He asked his descendants to remember him with laughter and to choose from among what he called his merry stories, the ones that made them laugh out loud, on his yurt site, and to gather together and read them once a year. And believe it or not, for more than 100 years, his family members have got together and read the stories that have made them laugh out loud. This is comedy as a weapon. And he also was kind of positioning literature as an alternative to liturgy, because in his letter to his family, he said, you know, there is, of course, the Kaddish, the memorial prayer, but if you don't want to say that, here is an alternative way to remember him. Now, his descendants are really lucky that his humor does stand up. There's a website devoted to his work, and you can listen to his stuff in Yiddish or in English. And fortunately for them, there's a wide repository to choose from. He really, in my research, I argue he was really the revolutionary game change for the genre. Because if you look, like, before the French Revolution at the pre-modern letters, they're fairly bossy pants, didactic. And what Shalom Aleichem did was he privileged storytelling and comedy. And let's face it, when do Jews not need a laugh, right? There's an irresistible power to laughing. Another letter that I recently featured is from a young man named Shachar Friedman, He was a 21-year-old Israeli soldier who was killed in the recent war. And his letter's really powerful for a variety of reasons. But one of the things he says is, and I'll just quote directly from him, "I fought so that I and my family and friends would live, that you would live, not so that you would survive, not so that you would breathe and exist, but so you would live life to the fullest. Do it. Travel all over the world in my name and do crazy things. Go out dancing as much as possible like I loved. Listen to special and diverse music and love life. Appreciate the little things that make our lives so special." So I share that letter because it pushes back against what some people imagine these are kind of melancholy letters. They're not at all. They're letters where people are sharing what has made their lives meaningful. How have they navigated catastrophe? What has helped to create a life of purpose? And his letter's really full of joy.
Is this a tradition in the Israeli army for soldiers to write letters to their family before going out in battle?
Yes, the tradition is more well-known in Israel than it is in diasporic communities. And after the war, after the October 7th, there are many Israeli families who were extremely generous in sharing the letters from their children in a public forum. Not everybody does that, but I have to say it's very powerful because you hear the person's voice. Most of your listeners will have been to many funerals, and we're used to hearing, you know, you can hear a very well-crafted eulogy that could be a beautiful braid of joy and sorrow and really capture somebody's life. But it's very different than hearing the voice itself. There's something very powerful. I think that's what really drew me into the book when I first started reading these, was I was hearing voices and that intimacy. When people are talking about what has really mattered and what they want to pass on to their children, grandchildren, or chosen family, whatever the circumstances of the person might be, there's an intimacy to the material.
So before we go further into examples of letters, I'm curious, how did you come across this letter from Shahar, and how have you come across the other letters that you have featured on your Substack?
So that's a great question. The letter from Shahar Friedman and another man named Ben Zussman, who was also killed after October 7th and wrote a letter that his parents chose to make public. Some of these are available online because families have decided to share them in a public way, which is really brave. And I'm incredibly grateful for that generosity. And it's also a way of hearing what they had to say. We can hear them. We can listen. Some letters I have kind of sourced from the Ghetto Fighters Museum in Israel, which is a museum that was founded by survivors. I haven't published it yet, but coming up soon in L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project, I have a letter from a 26-year-old mother from Kovno, Lithuania. She wrote a letter to her sister, who was then in Tel Aviv. And the purpose of the letter, we talk about L'Chaim, life. The purpose of the letter, the only purpose of the letter, was to try to save the life of her daughter, who was then 2 years old and was hidden with a Lithuanian Christian widow. So the mother's name was Tibula, means little dove in Yiddish. Tibula wrote this letter anticipating her own murder. She sent the letter to Tel Aviv. Her daughter, Zisela, who was then two, ended up being adopted. And Zisela, sometimes called Zina, became a family physician and ended up moving to Israel. But her adopted family never told her that she had family there. And it turned out the Christian Lithuanian widow with whom she had originally been rescued sent the letter to the sister in Tel Aviv. And so decades later, it's extraordinary, decades later, that helped connect her with Israeli family whom she was meeting for the first time. So I get them from different sources. I teach courses, and sometimes people will have a letter that they will share. I've taught courses where sometimes people will write a letter. I had a 90-year-old woman who wrote a letter to her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and one of her grandchildren bound it as a small book to give kind of as a gift to their family. So I get them from many sources, and I've always got my ears open and my eyes open looking for more.
Okay, this is fascinating. There's so much ground to cover, and I just want to move on to a different question. I know we were on a different track, but I want to stop you here and just ask you, what is the power of this tradition of writing a letter, a Jewish letter, as you call it, or Jewish wisdom letter? What is the power of this tradition for the writer, and what is the power of this tradition for the receiver?
So that's a great question. For the person who's writing a letter, it's really an act of values clarification. You're saying to yourself, what actually matters to me? We're coming up to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and you know, we have this powerful idea of cheshbon nefesh, and accounting for your soul. So this is not a cheshbon. This is not a bill for your restaurant burger and fries. This is, you know, the bill for your soul. And it's something that you can do every year. So the letters are a gift for the writer because they help people clarify what really matters. Now, Wendy, I'm going to tell you something completely crazy but true. Here goes. There are many people who race through their lives and they've never paused to figure out for themselves what has actually mattered to me, what has helped me navigate catastrophe, what has created big joy, or what does Jewishness mean? And the letters provide a way to do that. I'll share just one tiny story with you. There was a woman named Alana Zaman. She's an American rabbi. And when she was a teenager, she was 14 years old. Her dad was a rabbi, and he came home from work one day, and he was teaching an adult education course. And he had a pile of papers, and he gave them to his 14-year-old daughter, and he said, these are ethical wills, and I'm teaching a class at the synagogue. I want you to try to figure out which one is mine. So he had given an assignment, but there were no names. So this 14-year-old Alana goes into the den and is rifling through the papers and figures out fairly quickly which one is her father's. And she gets it right. After she had told her dad which letter she thought was his, she said she cried and she cried. Why did she cry? She said her dad was so beloved and so respected in his community, but in the letter, her father shared what he thought were his own shortcomings. Now, he's no longer alive, but she told me that when she has a bad day, she has the letter in her purse, she pulls it out, and she can hear his voice, and she can feel his presence. So that's one of the powers for the recipients of the letters.
That's an incredible story. I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, you know, for the average person, and I'm making assumptions here about our listeners who may or may not feel inclined to sit down and write a letter like this, but feel, as we're listening to you speak, the power of this and how meaningful a gift this would be to our children and grandchildren. How does one who is not a letter writer by nature go about doing something like this? If for anyone who's listening to this and says, hey, I need to do this, but I need some help.
So glad you asked. I happen to teach courses on this. So I create writing workshops and I kind of position it like a really quick cross training. And what I do is I provide what are called writing prompts to people. This is writing not for school. Nobody's marking it. You don't have to show your work to anybody, but I provide prompts to help people draft rough material. And once they have done a few prompts, I don't give them a lot of time. I tell them, I don't even want you to think. I just want you to imagine you're turning on a faucet and you're just letting the water flow. Just write whatever comes into your head. And by the end of that process, if you've done 10 or 12 prompts, even 3 minutes at a prompt, I guarantee you, you're going to have material on the page, and then you can later revise it and you can write your own prompts. And you can also, you can read L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project, so that you can kind of swim in the pool a bit and see what people are sharing. They really are, each one is like a snowflake. They're all different because, Wendy, if you were writing one, it would be your voice and nobody else has your voice. So it's your voice and your voice alone. And anybody, I tell people, you know, you can write a to-do list, a shopping list. I need mangoes and milk. You can do this. There's one letter I have by a retired American naval chaplain named Arnie Reznikoff. And he wrote a letter on the Times of Israel as a blog. He wrote a letter to his daughter. He's a former military guy, so maybe not surprising, but he did it in point form, like bullets. So there's many ways to simplify it and make it easy. You're not writing a literary masterpiece. Nobody's going to assess your narrative arc. It's just really about your own wisdom from your own life experience. And the really fun thing is when people start to do this, writing is often a form of thinking. Sometimes when I'm teaching, people will be surprised at what is coming out on the page because they'll discover things about themselves that they didn't know. Sometimes people will share what they have written when they're alive. Sometimes they'll share that with their children or their grandchildren. And sometimes their kids will say, "Really? I didn't know you felt so strongly about fill in the blank, tzedakah or Shabbat or whatever it might be." And sometimes it can function as a conversation starter. So it's totally possible. And I design my courses in a way to try to demystify it and make it fun.
Sounds very exciting. And it's something that I'm hopeful that someone in the community will listen to this and be motivated to bring you to Hamilton to do a workshop like this. I think it would go over very well. I just want to, on a personal level, to testify. I had a meaningful conversation with my husband a couple of weeks ago based on something I found on your Substack. You had given a list of prompts, I guess, that you found in a book by Stephen Leder.
Yeah, it's a remarkable book with amazing questions. The title is 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story.
You copied and pasted some of the questions in his book. And basically, my husband and I were sitting in the backyard one summer afternoon with a glass of wine, just the two of us. And I just said, "Okay, I've got this list of questions." And I started asking him one at a time. And we ended having the most beautiful, meaningful conversation. And later I considered, you know, maybe we should recreate this moment and I can videotape this and send it to my kids. It would be so easy to do. And I think I shared that with you, that this is for those of us who maybe feel more comfortable in conversation rather than writing things down, that these prompts that are featured on your Substack, that you could just have a meaningful conversation with your spouse or your child or whatever. And there you have it, instant.
Absolutely. We're living in an age where we have a lot of technological options. So it doesn't have to be a pen on a paper. It could be an audio recording. It could be a video recording. You know, the format matters less than the content. But those Steve Leder's questions are really good questions. They come out of decades working as a rabbi. And what another rabbi called, it's, I have another post from another rabbi called spiritual assessment. So these are really interesting things. I didn't grow up knowing any of these tools, but they're a way to really do some powerful internal work on your own values and what has mattered to you. And look, we're lucky we have this toolbox. The other thing is that, like, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur come around every year. You're not the same person this year that you were last year. And so if you have a tradition, every Rosh Hashanah, you make a different honey cake. Every Rosh Hashanah, you could write another letter. You could revise your letter. You could add. You could subtract. It's yours. It's not going to a school teacher for marking. You don't have to show it to anyone. It's yours and yours alone. And it can be a work in progress, which is actually how Arnie Reznikoff, the American naval chaplain, that's how he characterized his letter, because it's a snapshot of where you are at a particular moment.
And I love what you said about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Like, in Judaism, we have this built-in opportunity to reflect. And when you're sitting in shul and doing self-reflection, it can be difficult. Whereas if you have this list of questions that you're dialoguing with the people who are close to you, wouldn't it be an amazing ritual that families go through on an annual basis?
Oh, that's an incredible idea. L'chaim, the Jewish Letters Project dinner party. I love that.
Oh, love that. Love that. Conversation over Rosh Hashanah lunch or Rosh Hashanah dinner. This is what we could go around the table in our intimate family group and ask one question and then go around and everyone takes a turn answering this question. I'm getting so excited.
It's a beautiful idea and makes it very real, right? It really brings it home.
And brings a new ritual, a contemporary ritual into your Jewish observance.
It also is a way, I think, you know, Jewish civilization has this history of commentary and text. But this is a tradition for us. We're ordinary civilians, you know, we're not rabbis, but we can also make our own texts. We can engage with this and create something ourselves. And that's really powerful. You asked me, when I first saw you, why did this subject resonate with me? And I have to say, you know, you go to a party and there's a lot of small talk. Well, I fail at small talk. I am terrible at it. I really don't want to talk about the weather, but these letters are all about big talk. I love big talk.
My husband, who is a coach, an executive coach, he calls this meaningful conversations. And it's just such a great structure that creates this opportunity to have a meaningful conversation. And like I said, what better time to do it than the high holidays? That's beautiful. Leslie, is there anything I haven't asked you about the letters that you'd like to express before we close and I give people some more information about how to get in touch with you?
The only thing I would say is that I think my own observation about life is that you should never underestimate the power of a small gesture, because you never know what's going to happen. And I'll just leave you with one final story. I teach for an incredible American NGO called the Shomer Collective. And the Shomer Collective is an organization that helps people deal with death and dying through a Jewish lens. And I teach about the tradition every year. In 2023, I was teaching about the tradition for the Shomer Collective on Zoom, and there was a guy on the screen named Dave Finger, and he said, you know, my wife wrote one of these letters. And it turned out that his wife was a lawyer in Houston. She had a terrible year with her husband where their house had burned down. Her law practice was struggling. Her husband was unemployed. The amazing thing is, during this year, this stressful year, she wrote a letter and she put it in the drawer of her office, her legal office in Houston, but she didn't tell her husband, Dave, and she didn't tell her adult children. She left it there. She died. And after she died, Dave Finger brought her desk home into his Houston apartment. And one day he was looking for a document and he opened the drawer and there was this letter, and it had her old legal letterhead. So he discovered the letter. And then as a result of discovering, it's a beautiful, beautiful letter. It's on the Substack. he talked to his rabbi, and before her unveiling, he did a Dvar Torah about the tradition before the unveiling of his wife. And it turned out Dave Finger also worked as a volunteer with cancer patients, and he told them about the tradition. And he said he felt as if he had helped people, give them a tool to help reorder their lives. So the amazing thing is you can never predict the trajectory of what will happen afterward. And it's so much better to have something, I think, than have nothing at all.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. And it answers one of the questions that I haven't asked yet, which was, talk to me about the afterlife of one of these letters. So that was a beautiful example of the afterlife and the impact that it had. And I have no doubt in my mind that this conversation that we're having right now is going to have an afterlife here in Hamilton. So, Leslie, I'm sure many people listening to this would love to bring you here, and I hope that that happens. But in the meantime, can you please share with our listeners, if they want to explore your Substack, where should they go?
Yeah, so my Substack is called L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project. I offer it at no fee. It's my little flashlight during a dark time. So you just go to the Substack platform and you type in L'Chaim, L'Chaim, the Jewish Letters Project, and you'll find me. You hit the subscribe link and you'll see the archive of material there. You'll see the full range of letters, and you can actually hear the voices of our ancestors and contemporary letters as well, and you can hear what they have to say.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And if I don't have an opportunity to speak with you before the high holidays, I'd like to wish you Shana Tova and Gemar Chatima Tova. And it was really so beshert running into you as I did about a week and a half ago in Toronto. And that's what led up to this conversation.
Thank you so much, Wendy, for the opportunity. It was totally delightful.
The Spiel on Hamilton podcast is made possible through the generosity of the Allen and Millie Gould Family Foundation. The Spiel on Hamilton is a production of the Hamilton Jewish News, hosted and produced by me, Wendy Schneider, and edited by Colin Van Hattem. If you have any comments, questions, or stories you would like to hear on the show, please email wschneider@jewishhamilton.org. We would love to hear from you. Make sure to subscribe to the Spiel on Hamilton on your favorite podcast platform to learn more about our wonderful community.